So this talk is based on a paper that I put on the archive recently. It's quite a long paper, so good luck reading it. And it's based on, it sort of follows on from much earlier work, which is in this paper here. Okay, you might ask why I'm talking about quantum gravity during a quantum information session. Well, you've seen already Fatini gave a talk yesterday, and she started using ideas in quantum information in quantum gravity. And you'll see later Danny Turner do the same. And I think one of the great things about quantum information is just how widely applicable it is. It's a sort of very powerful toolkit that can be applied to many different areas of physics, not just the particular tools, but also the general philosophy. And so many people have tried to get to the top of this mountain. And in the past, they've typically come from either a quantum field theory background or a general relativity background. And so this is somebody coming from a quantum foundation stroke quantum information background, attempting an assault on this rather hazardous mountain. So here's the idea. So we have, to find a theory of quantum gravity, you have to, basically the task is to combine two less fundamental theories into a more fundamental theory. And that's not something that you can simply apply an algorithm to do. So the attack that I'm going to take is the following. I'm going to try and pick out what I think are the essential features, the essential radical features in each of these two theories, and then find a new framework which combines those radical features. And I'll be using methods that I've learned from quantum information. So if you look at these two theories, let's take general relativity. It seems to me that the radical element in GR is that you have a non-fixed causal structure. So consider some interval between two points. Well, you might want to know whether those two points are separated by a space-like or a time-like separation. And in fact, you can't say that in advance. In order to find out whether they are time-like or space-like separated, you have to solve Einstein's field equations to get the metric. And then once you've got the metric, you know whether those two things are space-like or time-like. So, and then you know the causal structure. So the causal structure isn't fixed in advance before you solve the equations. So that's general relativity. And I think the fact that we have non-fixed causal structure is the essential radical feature in that theory. In quantum theory, it's different. We actually have a background time. We have fixed causal structure. So we can see that in different ways. So here's one way of seeing it. If you do a calculation, you have to have a background time. So you apply some unitary evolution to a state, say. Here's a more subtle way of seeing the same thing. Consider two qubits, okay, passing through these boxes. And now consider these various pairs of these boxes. Imagine you want to write down an operator associated with these two boxes. Well, the operator you'd write down would be the tensor product, A cross B. Now imagine you want to write down an operator associated with these two boxes. Well, in that case, the operator you would write down would be the direct product, CB. Okay. In the first case, we have space-like situation, so that's so the reason that we need to use the tensor product. In the second case, we have time-like. And actually, these two things follow on immediately from each other sequentially. Here's another situation. I call this the question mark product. So we have D question mark B. And the idea of this operator is that if it acts on another operator, C, then it returns DCB. Okay. And that's a linear operator. It's something that you can find inside the theory. It's perfectly well defined. If you care to look for it. And this operator corresponds to another type of causal situation where you have a time-like separation, but you've got a gap in the middle. And one thing that's interesting to look at is what I'm going to call compression. So here's a sort of compression going on. If you take this case, the second case, then each of these two objects has a number of parameters inside them initially. Okay, so they're Hermitian matrices. So they have, in fact, n squared real numbers inside them. This one does and this one does. And when you combine them, you lose a lot of that information. So the object you end up with also has n squared, okay, rather than n to the power 4 parameters inside it. So there's a kind of compression. That doesn't happen, incidentally, with the other two cases. So in this case, if you take the tensor product of two operators, the number of real parameters you have afterwards is equal to the number of parameters, real parameters in this one, times the number of real parameters in this one. So there's no compression. And this case is more subtle, but you can see the same is true there. So one thing we see is that a signature of causal structure in quantum theory is that when you have what you might call causal adjacency, okay, when two events are, when these two things are causally adjacent, like here, then you have compression. And I'm going to find a mathematical framework that makes that more explicit. And yeah, one more point worth making. In quantum theory, the type of product you use depends on the causal structure. If you don't fix the causal structure in advance, then you don't want to have to separately identify the causal structure in order to know which kind of product to use. So what I want to do is unify all these different types of product into a single type of product. Okay, and that's going to be called the causaloid product. So here's the basic idea. I want to combine the radical elements of the two theories. General relativity is deterministic, but it has non-fixed causal structure. Quantum theory has fixed causal structure, but it has a kind of irreducible probabilism in it. So I'm going to look for a new framework called the causaloid framework. It's because the essential mathematical object in this framework is some new type of object which I had to find a name for, so I called it the causaloid. And this new framework admits probabilistic theories with non-fixed causal structure. I've been able to show that you can put quantum theory inside this framework, at least the quantum theory of interacting qubits. I haven't shown yet that you can put general relativity in the framework, but I think you can. It's something I'm working on at the moment. And I hope that this is a good framework for finding a theory of quantum gravity. Okay, so let me make an assertion. Here's the assertion. A physical theory, whatever else it does, must correlate data. It seems to me that's essential. A physical theory might do other things. It might explain why the world is the way it is. It might help promote your career. It might do all sorts of different things. But it seems that an essential feature of a physical theory is that it has to correlate data. So here's an example of the type of situation we might consider. Here I have two probes drifting in space, and each one has a tick, and a clock inside it which ticks. Now each tick time records some data, okay, on each of these probes. And then the data here that's recorded in this region, I'm going to call that data one. And the data that's recorded over here is data two. And so we're looking for a probabilistic theory. So we're going to consider probabilities like the probability of some data two given some data one. Okay, that's the sort of thing we might want to calculate. But there's a problem. In general, physical theories don't give you answers. Let me explain what I mean by that. Let's imagine we have three Stone Gerlach apparatuses in a row, or three spin measurements in a row along different directions. The outcome of the second spin result is given by, so if you specify the direction and outcome for the first spin measurement, then you can calculate the probability for the outcome of the second spin measurement along some given direction. On the other hand, if you're given the, if you can't calculate the outcome, the probability for the outcome of the third spin result, given only information about the first spin result, if you're not if you don't specify what happens in the middle, okay, is that clear? So you've got three spin measurements. If you say what happens for the first one, you can't calculate probabilities for what will happen at the last one, unless you also specify some information about the second one. Okay, and typically, typically in situations when we make predictions, we rely on the background causal structure to tell us what kinds of predictions we can make. So in this case, we rely on the fact that the second spin measurement follows immediately after the first one, whereas the third one doesn't. So we can ask, is this probability well-defined? And if it is well-defined, what is the probability? Okay, well, so here's the situation we're considering. And let's look at the usual approaches that we have in the literature in physical theories. So the most common approach, if you're trying to correlate, if you're trying to calculate these kinds of probabilities, is to simply use time evolution. So you calculate the state at some time corresponding to this data, D1. Then you evolve the state forward until you get a new state corresponding to this time data, data here, data 2. And then you use the mathematical machinery that the theory has in order to calculate this probability. And so we know how to do that kind of thing in quantum theory using state evolution. Another approach would be to solve some local equations. So for example, Einstein's field equations are local. And we can find solutions to those and then look at those solutions to see what information they give us about correlations between these pieces of data. And a third approach is where we look at histories. So for example, we might extremize the action, something like that. So what I want to do here is work on another approach, a fourth approach. And the idea is to write down expressions which directly answer this question. Is this probability well defined? And if it is, what is the probability? Okay. And the advantage of this approach is that we don't make ourselves refer to some pre-existing causal structure in order to be able to say what we allow ourselves to calculate. We have a very general approach which doesn't require that. So here is really the key idea, which I'll illustrate with quantum theory as an example. So the key idea is compression due to a physical theory. So here's the state for a spin half system in quantum theory. And you can see the diagonal entries are spin, the probability of spin up along the z direction and the probability of spin down. And then we have the off diagonal terms. And you can do a calculation and prove that they're given by this expression, okay, which you can notice is linear in probabilities, okay, px plus and py plus. So what that means is if you specify this object, then you have all the same information. This object contains all the same information as the usual density matrix. So this is just as good for specifying the state. And so what's happened, to think about this in a slightly more general setting, is by using this object, you can calculate the probability associated with a spin measurement along any direction. So we have a long list of probabilities that we might want to calculate. And then we have some linear compression. And we get a much shorter list of probabilities. And then we can decompress to go backwards to any probability in this longer list. So the physical theory is providing compression, in this case, down to just four probabilities. And associated with this compression, there's going to be some linear matrices. This is linear compression. There'll be linear matrices associated with that. And here, we pick out a particular set of measurements, particular set of measurement outcomes, and we call those the fiducial set, which I'm going to label with L. And there's things in this long list I'm going to label with alpha. Okay, so this matrix is a rectangular matrix which has this subscript and superscript. So in quantum theory, we're all used to this formula, the trace, the probability given by the trace of an operator associated with the measurement times the density matrix. Well, this is equivalent to a formula like this, where we take the dot product between a vector, which is contains all the probabilities, or contains the probabilities that define the state, and some object which lives in a kind of dual space, which is now associated with the measurement. So we have this association between operators and these vectors that live in the kind of dual space. And remember, we wanted to find some kind of way of unifying all these different products that appear in quantum theory. And what we're going to do is have a way of putting together these kinds of objects using a new kind of product called the causal load product. And so this is now going to be the new way of unifying all these products. So here's the usual way we think about quantum theory, at least. Normally we have some preparation, and then we have a state which is specified by the preparation. This is on a space like hypersurface. And then we have this state evolves, and it tells us probabilities for possible measurements that we might make in the future. Okay. So the new approach is instead to consider data in two regions separately, like this. And then this is what I said before, really just try to find a way to calculate these probabilities directly if they happen to be well defined. Okay. How am I doing for time? Until the 5 minute one. Okay, that's good. And does that the questions are in the 5 minute warning? The questions are in the 5 minute period. Okay, good. So the way this works is that there are three levels of compression, three levels at which we apply this kind of linear compression that I showed you previously. So here's the first level. So imagine, rather than dividing this region of space-time into a past and a future, we're just going to pick out some region, some arbitrary region here, and consider data inside this region. And then out here, we have other data. And then the data that's in this bigger region will be associated with a preparation. So P stands for preparation. And then the data that's collected in here, we'll think of that as corresponding to measurements. So now, strictly speaking, this isn't really preparation because it happens all around in the future, the past, to the sides. It's a sort of generalized notion of preparation. It's more analogous for those of you who are familiar with it to the kind of work that Aharonov has been doing with pre and post selected quantum systems. And what we're going to do is associate with some preparation outside this region. So this preparation P, we're going to identify a state inside this region. And the state is taken to be just a long list of all the probabilities associated with all the measurements that we could make inside this region. So alpha is a label that runs over all possible measurements plus outcomes inside this region. So these are all the probabilities for outcomes of measurements inside here. And then we're going to apply linear compression. So instead of specifying all these things separately, we are going to use the physical theory to restrict ourselves down to a smaller set of probabilities, just like we did in the case I showed you with a spin half system. So we end up with some smaller list of probabilities. Okay, so here's the smaller list. And then we're going to be able to calculate any arbitrary list in this long, any arbitrary probability in this long list of probabilities using a linear expression like this. Okay, this is by definition, because we've applied linear compression, we can therefore apply linear decompression. And so we get these objects, these R's, which are associated with the particular choice of measurement, measurement outcome. Okay. Okay, so these R's are objects that live in the kind of dual space. And then basically, this R's will have components. The components are labeled by small k. And there's an equality between the components of these objects and this new, and this thing here, this, these lambda matrices. Okay. So these objects are just the components of these objects. Okay. And these matrices basically can tell you how the physical theory is accomplishing this first level compression. Okay, how quantitatively you're doing the compression in this small region here. So now, second level compression. So second level compression applies to two or more regions. So here's the idea. Here, just consider two regions, region one and region two. And we have data labeled by alpha one here and alpha two here, so the measurements. And we do the same thing. So we have a preparation outside of these regions. And we can write down, we can consider the state to be all the joint probabilities associated with the measurement outcome here, alpha one, and the measurement outcome here, alpha two. So there are many of these as we run over different alpha one and alpha two. And then we can do linear compression. So we don't have to list all of these separately because they end up being related by the physical theory. So instead, we just list a subset of those probabilities, and that's in this list. And now we can decompress by a linear equation. So we can get any one of these probabilities from this shorter list of probabilities by applying some linear equation like this. Okay. And once again, the components of this object, I'm going to denote them by this, this compression matrix here. This is, this compression matrix contains the components of this object. Well, actually, I should be a bit more careful. What's actually happening at the second level of compression is that you get some additional compression over and above the compression that you had already at the first level. So in going from the, in going to the first level, we compressed from alpha to L, okay? And then we want to compress a bit further from L to K. So these second level matrices are supplying the additional compression that happens when you put these two regions together and consider them as a single region. Okay. And this second level compression is where we get this thing called the causal load product. So I have this equation from the previous transparency. I've written it in different notation. But basically, you can see this is a way of putting together two vectors, combining them with some linear matrices to get a new one. Okay. And if you actually, have some non-trivial compression, in other words, if the number of components in the compressed object is less than the product of the numbers of components in each of the original objects, then that's like the situation I showed you at the beginning, where you have the direct product of A and B. This is a signature of causal adjacency. So you can see the kind of causal structure reflected in the way in which you have second level compression. And then there's a third level of compression. So what happens is you get all these matrices. Okay, you can calculate these matrices. 5 minutes, good. And then all these matrices themselves, there's a long list of possible matrices associated with the first and the second level of compression. themselves can be compressed. In other words, there will be mathematical equations relating these objects, so it isn't necessary to specify each of them separately. What you can do is specify a small subset and then have some rules which tell you how to go back to the full set. So this is the way you use this formalism to make predictions. If you want to calculate the probability of data two given data one, you construct these two vectors. Okay, this data two bar is the data that doesn't correspond to data two, it's the opposite data, so to speak. So what you do is you construct these two vectors, and then this probability P is well defined if these two vectors are parallel, if and only if these two vectors are parallel. And then it's given by the, and in which case the probability itself is just given by this factor that relates to two vectors. So what we have is a new formalism. Within this formalism, we construct this object I call the causaloid. And this is actually a theory-dependent object. And then we have a whole set of basic equations, actually just a few basic equations. And those are independent of the particular physical theory, whether it's quantum theory or some other theory. And then using these two objects, we can calculate arbitrary probabilities. So this is the last slide. So what we have is a new framework, a framework for probabilistic theories without assuming fixed causal structure. It treats all pairs of elementary regions on an equal footing, and it provides, in particular, a unification of these different types of products that appear in quantum theory, the tensor product, the direct product, and also the question mark product. We can formulate quantum theory in this framework. We can hope to formulate general relativity in this framework because it doesn't assume a fixed causal structure. And so I hope it provides an appropriate mathematical setting for quantum gravity. I also think it might provide a useful mathematical setting for looking at quantum information, provide a way of looking at quantum information in the context of a broader class of physical theories, and maybe provide some insight into why quantum computers are so good. And that's it. Thank you.